You're listening to Bill Martinez Live. Live.
Hey, it's just for you. Hey, after all, this is a government of for, by, and we the people. And there is a call now that we the people stand up against, these things that want to take our government down and want to destroy this great American experiment. Yes, it's right before your eyes. Your eyes are not lying to you, ladies and gentlemen. You're seeing it for what it is. I just hope that you have the wisdom and the eyes to see how this is encroaching upon our freedoms. It's just about 28 minutes before the top of the hour. Clint Johnson is joining us now. He's a native of Fish Branch, Florida. And I live in Florida. I've never been to Fish Branch, so I'm certainly missing out on something. He is a history writer living in the mountains of North Carolina with his wife, Barb. He has written more than a dozen books on American history, with one foray into history and politics in the Politically Incorrect Guide to the South. You can find out more about Clint at ClintJohnsonBooks.com. Clint, welcome to the show. How are you?
Well, thanks for having me, Bill. Fish Branch is in Hardee County, which I went to school in DeSoto County, and we lived in Hardee County. It's about 50 miles east of Sarasota.
Okay, so it's on the west. That's probably why...
It's in the center of the state.
Oh, more in the center. Okay. For me, anything that's not on the coast... Coast is west. I've only been in Florida for 4 years, so it's still an adventure, and we're still learning. So thank you for sharing that. Now you are drawing me to Fish Branch just to say, hey, I've been there. So the next time we talk, I can tell you. Hey, I've checked it out personally, you know?
Well, please do. It's an unmapped farming community. I grew up on a cattle and orange farm, just as you've been talking about, that was when Florida was real Florida and when Americans were real Americans. So yeah. It was a good experience growing up.
Well, Clint, I can't thank you enough for the book. Clint's written a new book. It's called Tin Cans and Greyhounds, The Destroyers That Won Two World Wars. Tom Hanks is going to be, he's doing a movie that'll be released in 2020 on this very story. And this is excellent for those of us who plan to see this movie. Your book is excellent background and will give us more information than the movie will, and it'll really add some life to the movie, won't it?
Well, I think so. Hanks's book or movie is going to be based on a C.S.S. Forrester book about a destroyers escorting convoys across the Atlantic. Mm-hmm. And I deal with that in Tin Cans and Greyhounds about how when the war started in 1942, the U-boats were really tearing apart our convoys, and these destroyers and later destroyer escorts starting in 1943 started figuring out how to find them and sink them. And by the end of the war, the U-boats weren't even coming out of port because they knew that even going into the vast Atlantic, the U.S. Navy and the British Navy were finding them and sinking them. It was an incredible story of how technology really was developed so quickly in World War II.
Exactly. I was going to say, because the U-boats were having their way, were they not?
They had their way with the convoys right up through May of 1943, and then they started losing. We lost one destroyer in the United States coastal waters in February of 1942. That was the USS Jacob Jones off of Cape May, New Jersey. And so they started hitting us pretty early, and we lost several destroyers and destroyer escorts escorting these convoys across, but eventually the United States just overwhelmed the U-boats.
This story of Tin Cans and Greyhounds, how did this come to you? What just captured your imagination? You said, I've got to write this book.
Well, I was looking for something new. I said, I've been writing a lot of Civil War books through the years, and I stumbled across the story of this Jacob Jones. But the first Jacob Jones was sunk in World War I off the coast of England by a U-boat, the only warship we lost in World War I. And they replaced it with the second Jacob Jones, which was the only warship we lost in coastal American waters in World War II.
Probably a bad name. We don't have another Jacob Jones out there in the fleet now, right? Did they stop?
they have stopped naming ships the Jacob Jones, but there were actually several that namesakes that went down like that. The USS Meredith went down the Pacific, and then its replacement went down at the Atlantic during D-Day. So it was, and for you did not want to be sailing on the Jacob Jones, and I don't think they've replaced the Meredith or the Jacob Jones since then. But got me interested. I wanted to look at the coincidences of that, and then I just decided there really wasn't enough there for a book, so I went ahead and did a book on all the destroyers from United States, Great Britain, Germany, and Japan during from the time they were first invented in 1874 through the end of World War II.
Mm-hmm. Well, you say that these destroyers won two world wars. So as you broadened your perspective on this and went a little bit deeper, you're going, whoa, there's you know, some information to be mined here.
Right. We always talk about how Japan attacked our fleet at Pearl Harbor. Mm-hmm. And they really attacked, their main focus was pre-World War I built battleships. Battleships were really archaic and obsolete by that time. I looked into it, and the battleships that were refloated after Pearl Harbor won only 32 battle stars, which means they engaged the enemy 32 times. There were 50 destroyers at Pearl Harbor, and they engaged the Army or the Japanese Navy 438 times. Mm, and so I make the case the Japanese really attacked the wrong ships at Pearl Harbor. They should have been trying to destroy all the destroyers and leaving those ancient battleships right where they lay.
Well, explain to our audience the difference between a destroyer and a battleship.
Well, a battleship is about three times as large as a destroyer. Its guns go up to about 14 inches, 16 inches in circumference, and it has armor plating around its hull of about 13 inches thick. Mm. A destroyer is about one-third that size. Its hull is only 5/8 of an inch thick, and its guns are no bigger than 5-inch guns, and it does carry torpedoes on it, which battleships didn't have. So a destroyer was really kind of developed as a, it was developed to carry the torpedo. Mm-hmm. By the time World War II came along, it escorted the cruisers of the battleships and the aircraft carriers, and then it was principally to sink submarines. Mm-hmm. No other ship was good enough to sink a submarine other than a destroyer. But during World War II, they also formed them into their own fighting units, where they would attack the enemy at principally at night. They're using radar. They'd figure out where the Japanese were. The Japanese did not carry radar. We would fire torpedoes, wait to see if any of them hit, then attack with our cannons, and then get the hell out of there. Turn around and get out as quickly as you could.
Exactly.
Because if you were going up against Japanese battleships and cruisers, their guns were three times your size. Mm-hmm. And so a shell hit could sink a destroyer, because it simply was unarmored compared to a cruiser or battleship.
Yeah, you talk about it. That's why they were called tin cans, right? Because of their thin metal hulls.
Sailors just kind of gave them that, because it's not a whole lot thicker than the tin cans you're pouring soup from. And the British called them greyhounds of the sea because they're so graceful looking, and they could go about 38 knots, which is about 42 miles per hour. And they could turn, and they just look so graceful when they're going at high speeds. So that's where the greyhounds came from.
Well, Clint, when the Pacific Fleet was attacked at Pearl Harbor, and then there was a call by the president to, you know, we got to build ships. You know, at that time, you know, it took years. It took more than a year to build a ship, and now we went on a month schedule. It's incredible. It speaks of the, you know, the innovation and, you know, just the productivity commitment of American citizens, you know, when we were brought into the war and we had to replenish that fleet. Was there more of a concentration on destroyers than battleships in the rebuilding of the Pacific Fleet?
Oh, yeah, there was only a handful of battleships that were constructed anytime that were under construction when Pearl Harbor came along. USS North Carolina, which is on display down in Wilmington, North Carolina, was the most modern one, and it was started to be built in the 1930s. They did not build any more battleships after that, but we started building destroyers at a rapid rate. There were 10 different shipyards. Before the war, a Gleaves-class destroyer was built in about a year and a half. When we really cranked up, we were turning out Fletcher-class destroyers, about every 3 months.
Wow, amazing.
So we built 175 Fletchers in the same time that the Japanese...
We got to go to break. We got more from Clint Johnson after this. Stay with us.